I think we're going to have a more full quorum than this, but let's begin. Council, please come to order. Carl, call the roll, please.
Fritz?
Here.
Fish? Saltzman?
Here.
Novick? Hales?
Here. Thank you very much. I think Commissioner Fritz has an announcement before we begin our communication items this morning.
Thank you, Mayor Hales. Carrie Jo Stairs died earlier this month from heart failure at the age of 49. Carrie Jo was a founding member of the Portland Commission on Disability, having been appointed in 2009. In her application to become a commissioner, she had expressed her interest in contributing to the reshaping of the social and physical environment of Portland so that all people may experience equality, independence, autonomy, and full access to life. Carrie Jo was a cancer survivor, having been diagnosed at the age of 12. She was treated with chemotherapy and survived the disease, but the chemotherapy caused her to have congestive heart problems the rest of her life. Despite her health challenges, she worked as a community activist for over 20 years, putting her time, energy, and talent into building skills in negotiation, nonviolent communication, effective advocacy, coalition building, empathetic understanding, and respectful service. She worked professionally as a mental health advocate, a medical technician specialist for seniors, mediation specialist for Resolutions Northwest, contributor to an LGBTQ newspaper, restorative justice specialist for the county, and a prison release advocate for the state of Oregon, all in those short 49 years. Her own words when applying to serve on the Portland Commission on Disability may provide the best picture of Carrie Jo and her passion for her beloved community. There is much work to be done with regards to ending discrimination, reducing barriers, ensuring access, and increasing awareness of the needs of people with disabilities. Any action towards that end is an accomplishment. I hope to serve on the commission as a venue to realize that goal. And indeed, Carrie Jo Stairs did do that and epitomize the spirit of Portland. Please join me in a moment of reflection to honor her life and legacy. Thank you, Mayor Hales.
Thank you very much. Good morning and welcome. We have a number of communication items before the time certain, so if you'd read those, please, Carla, call people up.
Item 32, request of Beth Hahn to address council regarding fluoride and chemical sensitivity.
Good morning, Ms. Hahn. Are you here? Welcome. Come on up. You have 3 minutes. If you're representing an organization, just state your name for the record. You don't need to give us your address, but state your name for the record, and if you're representing an organization, just please let us know what organization.
The mic is on. Okay. Mayor Hales, commissioners, my name is Beth Hahn, and speaking of needs of people with disabilities, I have multiple chemical sensitivity, or MCS, which is recognized as a disability under the Americans with Disabilities Act, and it's crucial for people with MCS to avoid exposure to chemicals. I am hypersensitive to fluoride and have been told by my doctors to avoid it, and even small amounts can cause me to have severe reactions. The American Academy of Environmental Medicine explains MCS as a very real chronic medical condition that has been only slowly gaining the public recognition it deserves. Recent estimates suggest that chemical sensitivity, that is, hypersensitivity to various environmental agents, also known as incitants or triggers, may afflict something like 10 to 15% of the American population. Fluoride-containing water is considered an incitant by the American Academy of Environmental Medicine. I expend a tremendous amount of time and energy and money to stay a productive member of this community in spite of having serious health challenges, and I fear that with water fluoridation, that would be impossible, given my known hypersensitivity and that there's no way to avoid exposure if it's in our water. My state-of-the-art water filter easily removes chloramines and disinfection byproducts, but no water filter will remove fluoride. You have to go to reverse osmosis or distillation, both of which are extremely expensive both to purchase and to maintain, so this becomes an equity issue at this point. RO also waste, reverse osmosis, waste 3 to 5 gallons of water for every gallon it produces. I would need to use purified water for drinking, cooking, and rinsing vegetables. So this is a lot of water. Additionally, like chlorine, fluoride is readily absorbed through the skin when bathing, but unlike chlorine, fluoride cannot be removed with a simple shower filter. And it's really critical for the hypersensitive that all sources are removed, because even small amounts can cause serious health consequences. If you force fluoridation on people who are medically unable to tolerate it, some of us will suffer serious health consequences and we will have no way to avoid exposure. So since multiple chemical sensitivity is considered a disability under the Americans with Disabilities Act, I wonder how the city plans to accommodate people like me whose health would be seriously compromised. It's easy for those who want fluoride to obtain it, but for those of us who cannot tolerate it, who are medically unable to tolerate it, it's impossible to avoid exposure if it's in our water. Let's find solutions for dental decay that are safe for all our citizens and harmful to none. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Carla, next one, please.
Item 33, request of Charlie White to address council regarding fluoridation endorsements and process.
Good morning. Welcome. Again, just state your name for the record, and if you're representing an organization, let us know.
My name is Charlie White. I'm always representing myself, but I'm also a member of Clean Water Portland. I wanted to welcome you, Mayor, and also our new Commissioner Novick. We as a people are easily conditioned, and unless we're willing to look at history, question power politics, and follow money trails, we are lost and risk making foolish or short-sighted or even harmful decisions. Edward L. Bernays, the nephew of Sigmund Freud, became known as the father of public relations. Among his many successful campaigns was to help persuade Americans to accept water fluoridation, he admitted, by stressing a claimed public health benefit. He understood the often unconscious trust the public had in medical authority, such as physicians and other opinion leaders. He chuckled, saying, "You can get practically any idea accepted if doctors are in favor, because doctors are authority figures." Public health endorses fluoride thanks to Bernays and a top Wall Street lawyer for the Aluminum Company of America, Alcoa, Oscar R. Ewing. Ewing served as Federal Security Agency Administrator of the Truman Administration, who had jurisdiction over the Public Health Service. In 1960, he advised the Commissioner of Health for the City of New York on how to sell fluoride to the voters through the engineering of consent, which was a well-known Bernays essay on techniques of media manipulation and public relations. I'm going to skip because I'm going to run out of time here, but the opposition seems to be getting a better reception from the public in any battle of propaganda or public debate. So fluoridation could be achieved by a systematic, targeted campaign directed at those specific officials who had voted against fluoridation, or by lobbying ethnic groups of political importance. Other ways would be remove the fluoridation issue from the arena of public opinion, make the decision a health ruling from the Board of Health and or secure enough votes, change the balance of public opinion so that the political leader can be convinced that a large majority of his supporters favor his action. Determine the major ethnic groups of political importance in political communities, in particular communities. Covertly direct major television media and write letters to influential editors. These are all means to persuading the public toward water fluoridation. Publishers of dictionaries and encyclopedias were contacted, thereby creating the definition of the word fluoridation. An influential citizens committee was formed. Famous names signed on to the committee to protect our children's teeth. A lavish booklet called Our Children's Teeth was distributed, falsely reassuring fluoride safety and denouncing opponents depicted as cultists, chiropractors, food faddists, misguided and misinformed persons ignorant of the scientific facts. It appears this playbook has been circulating for a half century. Portland doesn't need to follow the playbook of propaganda and persuasion. I hope we are wiser than that. Fluoridation chemicals are nothing more than toxic industrial waste sold to a trusting public. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Carla, next item, please.
Item 34, request of Kelly Barnes to address council regarding water fluoridation.
Good morning. Welcome.
Same procedure.
Just give us your name for the record, and if you're representing an organization, just let us know.
My name is Kelly Barnes. I'm here representing myself and my two children. I reside in Portland as a physical therapist, and I'm a healthcare practitioner of 20 years. I have three graduate degrees in allied health and one in undergraduate in biology. My biggest concern about this discussion is one of having access for the public to be educated. I believe it is an issue of equity. I believe we do need to discuss with all parties involved what that means. When the CDC has data showing that children of color are more at risk through the policy of water fluoridation than white children, I believe that is a question of equity that should reach all of our community speakers and leaders. I'm asking you today to do two separate items. I have all this information. I fell asleep with my daughter last night. None of it is typed up. But I believe in this passionately. I don't believe I should be doing research at midnight to bring this cause to the forefront of our community. I would like to invite each of you to invite our community leaders in the issue of equity to the table so they can understand that the CDC believes that the adverse unintended effects of fluoridation affect children of color 2-to-1 for Black Americans and 1.5-to-1 for Latino children. That is an important issue, and it's an unintended side effect of this policy. We know that fluoridation chemicals used in this process, according to the Portland Water Bureau, will be coming from hydrosalicylic acid. There are new studies since 2007 and 2011 that show fluoride is not fluoride is not fluoride. It does not simply disassociate into an ion where there are other chemicals present, such as lead. That is important in Portland. It is relevant for Portland discussion because we have a lot of lead in our pipes. Unfortunately, children of color are more adversely affected by this because of exposure to lead. I believe that you are each responsible, ultimately, because the FDA takes no responsibility or policy regulation for this issue, because the EPA also steps out of this issue, and because the manufacturers of this product accept no responsibility and liability. Therefore, it is our policymakers that are putting this upon the public to vote that ultimately are responsible. I invite you, please, to consider inviting these people to the table. I would love to be present for that discussion. Dr. Yolanda White, a physician from Atlanta, Georgia, who's a pediatrician, would like to be present for that discussion. I also ask each of you, please, to do due diligence and to look at the equity issue. I'm a single mother. I have a gallon bottle of water back there from Gerber's that is non-fluoridated because they are now recommending through the American Academy of Pediatricians and through the CDC that children under 6 months of age do not consume fluoridated water due to fluorosis risk. Assuming that a single mother of a young child making infant formula has the wherewithal, the knowledge, or the financial means to go to the store, who wants to carry their six-month-old baby on one hip and a gallon of bottle of water on their other hip? Please consider that equity means equity for all, those that are chemically sensitive, as spoken about earlier, and those people of color that are most at risk. When the therapeutic value of this policy is marginal at best, and CDC studies are showing this, why are we not having more discourse? And I know that this is an issue the public will be voting on, but please help us reach the public. You can consider endorsements, and you can bring these people to the table. And I will gladly participate in that discussion and would love to be present. Thank you.
Thank you. Hey, Carla, next one, please.
Item 35, request of Eric Froschneider to address council regarding housing authority recklessly endangering the public.
Okay. Good morning.
Good morning.
Should I begin?
Yes, please.
Okay. First of all, I had living in the Housing Authority of Portland, and I had a restraining order on another tenant. Number is 1204-64600. I then had a doctor's notice that was given to me as soon as I could possibly get it on after the restraining notice on 6-7-2012. And it says that my mental health has been compromised by this tenant who I had a restraining notice on. So I had a doctor's notice and I had a restraining notice on this other tenant who was living in my building. Now, the manager's job is to keep the building safe. It says in my lease that the building will be safe. So I wrote to Lisa Yarborough through my building manager, Dennis Mitchell, almost 3 weeks later on June 27th, she writes back, I have received your request for reasonable accommodation to transfer to a different apartment. Based on the information provided, I am denying your request for reasonable accommodation. The information does not show a connection between your disability and the accommodation requested. Home Forward cannot ensure that moving to a different property would mitigate issues you may have with neighbors. This person that I had a restraining notice on and my doctor wrote about saying that he had put my mental health in danger was then arrested as a fugitive where he was renting from the Housing Authority of Portland by a number of police officers. The case number for this is 1264744. I would like to bring both Lisa Yarborough, the real estate specialist who denied my transfer, and then at the time building manager Dennis Mitchell to face criminal charges of reckless endangerment and mental anguish upon my life. And I would like the city to make sure that this comes to a fair court trial because I am diagnosed as disabled with anxiety and depression. The responsibility of this should not be mine alone. The decisions on tenants' lives made by the Housing Authority, if poorly made, can be a endangerment to the public. Endangerment is a person commits the crime of reckless endangerment if the person recklessly engages in conduct which creates a substantial risk of serious physical injury to another person. Reckless conduct is conduct that exhibits a culpable disregard of foreseeable consequences to others from the act or omission involved. The accused need not intentionally cause a resulting harm. The ultimate question is whether that made is whether under all the circumstances the accused conduct was of the heedless nature that made it actual and imminent danger to the rights and safety of others, and I feel that it has.
Well, thank you for bringing this to our attention, and I hope the Housing Authority is able to help you get to a safer and better situation. Thanks for being here this
morning. I'm not counting on the Housing Authority helping me. As far as I'm concerned, they are criminals. I'm counting on the city to come forward and give this media attention.
Thank you.
So the public can decide. Thank you.
Thanks. So now, Carla, can we get to item 36, and I'll have a few comments at the outset.
You want to do the consent agenda?
Oh, sorry, I did it again. Eventually you'll get me trained. I don't believe there are any council requests to withdraw items from the consent agenda. If there are none this morning, then we'll take a roll call on the consent agenda.
Public mic.
Sorry. Yes. Public. Is there anyone here to testify on a consent agenda item? Hearing none, we'll now take the roll call.
Fritz?
Yes, aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Okay, practice will eventually make perfect. Now, item 36, please.
Accept the report on the 2013 state legislative agenda.
I'm very pleased to have this item on the calendar this morning. It's a process that's been underway for some time, actually starting last spring with the council then, and Mayor Adams went out of his way to make sure that I and Commissioner Novick were included in the December deliberations that the council was having on the legislative agenda. So it feels to me like we've had a successful deliberation among ourselves. The purpose of today's discussion is to both give our government relations staff a chance to go through the package that has, as it has been crafted, and give the public a chance to comment on it before we take our case to the next session of the legislature. To me, in crafting this package, it's important for us to have priorities that are both those of this as a municipal corporation and for us as a community. We have some amount of clout in the state legislature. We should use it for the issues that are most important to us as a community and that have some bearing on our work here at the city, even though some of these issues, as we'll talk about this morning, cross governmental boundaries to, say, schools or county government. So I think striking that balance is important. And then, obviously, as in any process, trying to have a relatively short list of key priorities is important, even though all the issues on this agenda matter to us. Again, in the practical realities of the politics of the legislature, we'll get to have influence on a few. So that's those are the balances that we're trying to strike here. I'm going to invite Martha Pellegrino to come up with her staff and present the package.
Good morning.
Morning.
Mayor Hales, commissioners, for the record, Martha Pellegrino, Director of the Office of Government Relations. Very pleased to bring the 2013 report on the state legislative agenda to you today for your consideration. I'd like to begin by acknowledging my staff, who have been working diligently over the last several months on this. To my left is Dana Eisenbeiss, the Manager of State Government Relations. To my right, Andy Smith, our Senior Associate of Government Relations. And then in the audience and probably listening upstairs, we have Stephanie Mendoza-Gray, Molly Woon, Amy Jokowski, and Leslie Kelly. This has certainly been a team effort of epic proportions. So, Mayor, as you referenced, the process for building this legislative agenda began back in May when we began soliciting potential ideas for both priorities and initiatives for inclusion in the package. And we've been working since then to gather and vet issues for inclusion. We've also had an extensive outreach process to state agencies, other governmental entities, business groups, and nonprofits to determine their priorities for the upcoming session and look for areas of alignment and partnerships. We've also invited staff from the Office of Equity and Human Relations to participate in our meetings when we talk with groups about issues they're going to be pushing related to equity in bills in Salem. For our community engagement strategy, we partnered with the Office of Neighborhood Involvement under the leadership of Commissioner Fritz. We had two very successful listening sessions with the community, one in August and the other in September. Both were very well attended, and with over 50 people participating in each meeting. And then even last week, we completed our final session, which was an advocacy 101 training session. We had two of our distinguished state legislators turn up for that training, Senator Burdick and Representative Lou Frederick. So turning to the report before you, I want to mention that the agenda is structured in three different areas. First are the priorities, which were the limited number of bills and issues that are of the highest significance to the city. Secondly are the initiatives, and these are the bills where the city is taking the lead on moving these pieces of legislation through the legislature. These often require the greatest investment of time on behalf of myself and my staff. And then lastly are the policy positions, meaning a much larger number of legislative issues on which the city is taking a position and will work to support or oppose those issues. Mayor, as you mentioned, on December 4th, we brought you the draft agenda at the Council informal work session and have very much appreciated the additional feedback and guidance from each of your offices. At this point, I will turn things over to Dan Eisenbeiss to walk through the one-page memo that shows the changes to the draft since that work session. And then what we'll do is just open it up for your questions. If you'd like us to walk through in any more detail or answer any other questions, we'd be happy to do so. So, Dan.
Again, for the record, Dan Eisenbeiss with the Office of Government Relations. Before you, you have a memo outlining the changes to the agenda that's before you today from the council work session. We'd just like to walk through some of the significant changes on that list. Beginning on page 2, the education funding priority has been revised. And on page 3, the public safety budgeting placeholder has both been filled in and now encompasses what had been the community mental health placeholder. On page 7, the property tax reform priority has also been revised. And moving to the policy positions, on page 18, the brownfield redevelopment policy position has been revised to encompass more than just the state revolving fund for brownfield redevelopment. The former placeholder for coordinated care organizations and 911 responders has been removed from the draft. And then on page 29, paid sick leave has been fleshed out where it had previously been a placeholder. On page 32, a gun safety policy position has been added to the agenda. And on page 33, the placeholder for lottery establishments has been fleshed out. And on page 35 and 36, you will see that the transportation funding and state shared revenue items have been moved to the policy position section.
So that's kind of a pretty quick run through at least some of the changes. We'd be happy to take any questions at this point.
Okay. Questions from council? Comments about any of these items?
So what is our position on property tax reform? And how does that square with the League of Oregon Cities position?
So the current draft before you calls out support for three component concepts. Support for the League of Oregon Cities concepts to allow local option levies outside of compression if approved by voters, and to refer an amendment to voters to require a reset of assessed values at the time of property sale. The priority also...
That's the League of Oregon Cities.
Those are the League of Oregon Cities concepts. The priority also calls out support for proposing an amendment to the League's local option levy concept to base local option levies that are approved by voters on real market values rather than assessed values.
So we are fully support of the League of Oregon Cities' position on property tax reform.
We crafted the position with the intent that it would position the city to advocate for each of the three concepts.
Are you concerned there's a delta between our position and the League's position?
Well, I'm concerned there is a potential delta if the League's position. I just want to make sure that if the League's position prevails, there is absolutely no doubt the city of Portland supports the League's position. Is that... I see head nods, I understand Commissioner Novick wants to advocate a tweak to that. That's fine. But if the tweak does not become part of the package, I don't want there to be any doubt that the City of Portland is fully in support of the League of Oregon City's number one priority.
Mayor Hales, fellow commissioners, this is an issue that I've discussed with Commissioner Saltzman and with the legislative team. I think that's, personally, I don't like the League's original proposal on collection of levies outside the Measure 5 limits without the tweak to apply the rates to real market values. Commissioner Saltzman strongly feels that we should support the League's original proposal regardless, and I've been in touch with the League, and they are actively considering amending their proposal to apply rates to real market values. What I had hoped, and I think our legislative team said they were amenable to this, is that at this point we could avoid asking the mayor and Commissioner Fritz and Commissioner Fish to choose between Commissioner Saltzman and me, since I'm sure you love us both equally, and sort of let this issue ride, and hopefully that we won't have to make a choice because hopefully the League will adopt my friendly amendment. So I would ask you your feelings of that, and also ask the legislative team if at this point you're comfortable with the idea of not having to make that sharp choice. You know, if you're driven to the wall, do you support the League's original proposal without my amendment?
Okay, advice about this in terms of, seems to me as a former League board member, we can have a little distance between us and the League board, at least at the outset of the legislative session, but I don't want to set us up for...
Yeah, no, I have no concern with having a difference at the outset. I'm just saying at some point the proposal may be narrowed down, and you know, the League's number one priority is a certain way, and if the League is not amenable to the friendly amendment of Commissioner Novick, I want to make sure that there's no ambiguity that the City of Portland still supports the League's number one priority. I'm okay with ambiguity at this point, but I just want to make sure that we're fully in concordance with the League's number one priority.
Yeah, maybe I don't fully understand the difference between the two approaches, but Commissioner Novick, if the league, you don't regard the league's proposal as a step backwards.
Actually,
or do you?
I regard the, I mean, the problem is that currently all local option and permanent property tax rates are applied to Measure 50 assessed values, right, which in Portland especially creates huge inequities, because neighborhoods that have experienced huge gentrification since 1995 pay very low taxes because their assessed values are so low, whereas other neighborhoods which haven't seen significant appreciation since 1995, particularly as the Portland Tribune outlined last week on the Outer East Side, their properties tend to be very close to real market value. So right now, if you could have one property that's real market value is $300,000 on the Inner East Side, another property that's real market value is $300,000 on the Outer East Side, and the assessed value for the recently gentrified property is $30,000. These examples do exist. The assessed value for the Outer East Side property is $300,000. So they're paying 10 times the taxes on the same rate. Right now, the Measure 50 limits act as something of a break in those inequities, because at least the Outer East Side property doesn't have to pay more than $15 per thousand. If you adopt the league's proposal without my tweak, then when you add a $1 per thousand local option tax, then the property on the Outer East Side is paying $300, whereas the property on the recently gentrified property is paying $30. So I feel that the league's proposal, as originally introduced, would exacerbate those existing inequities. So personally, and again speaking personally, I would oppose the league's proposal without the tweak. I mean, the league is actively considering the tweak. I've talked to Jules Bailey, who is the lead legislator, and I believe he introduced the bill, and he said he's very open to considering it. So if we had to make a decision, I would encourage the legislative team not to support the league's original proposal. If the legislative team is okay with it, I mean, I don't know that we need to make a decision at this time. If it's okay for them to circle back and talk to the mayor, Commissioner Fritz, and Commissioner Fish to get a sense of the city as a whole.
Mayor, could I jump in?
Yeah, please.
First of all, as a veteran now of, I think, four of these, or maybe three of these, I'm painfully aware that through the legislative process, things change, and the sausage making takes us in different directions. And generally, I've been comfortable with giving our crack team sort of broad instructions, but they then come back and brief us, and we have other points along the way. And there is ample precedent for us revisiting this question when there's greater clarity about what the league is proposing and what, and more importantly, in some respects, what the legislative leadership is going to be presenting. So that's number one. And I'm generally okay with a broader mandate and the check-in points, because it allows us to be nimble. Because frankly, this process doesn't really work with us being prescriptive right now, because we're just one player. Secondly, the point that Steve's making, I think, is a very important one. But I think the implications of this change, I think, warrant a broader discussion. The inequity that Steve's identified is manifest, is clear. But the fix that's being proposed does not provide any tax relief to people on the East Side. It equalizes the tax receipts collected in areas that have gentrified. And that piece, I actually want to spend a little more time thinking about, because the way it's been presented is we're outraged that there's this inequity. And I think people east of 205 might well read that and think, well, there's something in this where I will see a reduction in my taxes. And in point of fact, the net result of this change would be that others would see a sharp increase in their taxes to more equalize the load, but there would not be a reduction. And I'm not sure that we've had a robust enough discussion about that policy and its impact on homeowners for me to say today that I'm comfortable with the fix.
Mr. Mayor, if I may.
Could I just introduce?
Sure.
Thank you.
I think it's a very complicated issue, obviously, and measures 547 and 50 broke our entire system. And it's the inequities are beyond different neighborhoods. Similarly valued properties in the same neighborhood can have vastly different property taxes under this, under our current system. So I'm very interested in anything that makes it better. I also am very interested in allowing voters to approve local option levies outside of compression, because that would be an option for funding our schools. And I think one of our other priorities in this legislative agenda is funding our schools. And we cannot continue to be allowed to approve capital bond measures to make our schools structurally safe while not having enough teachers to teach children in our schools. That's a fundamental priority that I think we would all agree on this. So I'm comfortable with having the discussion today, the direction to staff. I've been very impressed over the last 4 years at the government relations willingness and commitment to making sure that all five members of the council are consulted and that we as a council speak together as one voice. So it's helpful to have this airing. The major problem is that our property, and in fact all of our tax structure in Portland, is broken, and in Oregon is broken and doesn't fund the things that we need to fund.
Just one comment on Commissioner Fish's point. Although neither proposal would reduce anyone's taxes, having the tax rates applied to real market value would, for a given levy, result in, when a jurisdiction has a target dollar amount that they want to collect, they could do so with lower rates applying to everybody. And basically, for that pot of money, the people on the Outer East Side would wind up paying a smaller share than under the league's original proposal. Because if you have a target amount of money and can get, I mean, if you can get it from everybody equally, then you don't have to collect so much from the people whose property has high assessed value.
And if I may, Mayor, what I'm hearing here is our delegate, our representative to the League of Cities, has said, I would like us to be faithful to their package. The reality, my understanding is, the reality is that there's going to be a fix in this session, provided there's a big enough coalition, and the League has a big say. Our colleague has said he thinks there should be a tweak to it, and there's a discussion that is ongoing about that tweak. I'm not sure it's a decision for us today to resolve that, other than to say we rely on the professionalism of our team to guide this ship down the road and come back to us if at some point there's a break. If at some point the League goes in a direction that perhaps one of our colleagues disagrees with, then we come back for discussion about that.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think looking at the language of the objective here, I think we can send, I hope, actually, both of you into the legislative process as advocates on this issue, you as our League board member and you, Steve, as somebody who's taken an interest in this issue. That's what it's going to take for us to have any clout on these issues, is not only instructions to our team, but also people on the council that are willing to invest time and political capital and trying to advance this stuff. So, I mean, I just sat here as this discussion was taking place and reread the language itself. I think it allows this reasonable debate among people with the same objective to keep going while we figure out whether they're willing to do any of this. So that would be my counsel. I think you're correct, Commissioner Fish. Other comments or concerns about the language in the presentation?
Just a question of protocol, Mayor. I have an amendment. And do you want the amendment to be on the table before we take public testimony?
Please, yeah. Let's just get the amendment on the table and we'll vote on it at the end.
Is it appropriate, Martha, for me to move this for purposes of discussion so it's part of our package?
Yes, please.
So I would move the amendment that is before us.
Is there a second?
Second, but could you just describe it for the public?
Yeah. So the amendment that is before you would add a sixth initiative. And it would authorize Martha and her team to seek a very specific legislative fix on a problem that has arisen concerning the interpretation and implementation of our tax abatement programs. As council knows, Chair Kogan and Commissioner Kefouri, Commissioner Fritz and I spent 2 years working to reform our tax abatement programs and came with a big fix to the to council last year. from time to time, specific issues come up that the county and the city can either litigate or they can go to Salem for relief. We did it 2 years ago when there was ambiguity about whether tax abatements could cover the commercial portion of an otherwise exempt building, and Chair Kogan and the city felt that we should have that discretion, particularly in areas where we're thinking about addressing a food desert by cross-subsidizing a grocery store, for example. So we sought specific legislative relief. In this instance, a question has come up that has been initially decided by the tax court concerning whether a city-owned property that would otherwise be tax-exempt if it was owned by a nonprofit or a housing authority is also eligible for a tax abatement. And the property in question is the Fairfield, which is home to Section 8 tenants. Both the State Revenue Department and the tax court have suggested politely that rather than litigate this question, we might seek legislative clarification about the scope of the exemption. In this instance, Chair Kogan concurs, and if it is the will of the council, the city and the county would go down to Salem and seek a very limited relief that simply says that the city has the same exemption in an otherwise eligible building that a housing authority and a nonprofit would have. And the benefit of this approach is we'll save a ton of taxpayer money that would otherwise be spent litigating a question which apparently is ambiguous. And so this amendment simply authorized Martha to seek limited legislative relief, and it has the concurrence of the county chair.
Thank you. Other questions of staff or concerns, please?
Well, I guess I want to raise the question about on our support for education that we it's referred to as K-12 education. I think with all the efforts underway and all the recognition of the importance of pre-K in terms of getting kids to school ready to learn, that I guess I'd like to raise for discussion that we amend it to say pre-K through 12 education funding.
If that's an amendment, I'll second it.
Okay. That's an amendment.
For purposes of discussion.
And do we have another one on higher education, or should we make it pre-K through higher?
I'm comfortable with pre-K through 12.
Do we have
Higher education has its own.
We don't have a higher education item on the list at this point. The reason, that from my perspective, the reason why this item is on the calendar the reason why this item is on the list and prioritized as it is that we as a community have a profound stake in the outcome of K-12 education. We as an economy have a profound stake in the outcome of higher education beyond that. I'm not denigrating or minimizing that, but in terms of the nexus with what we're charged with doing here at the city, that to me seems the strongest connection. Doesn't mean we don't care about the rest of the agenda. It also is, again, a question of where we might be influential in the legislature. And I think we have a chance at it on this issue.
And Commissioner, I failed to mention when I talked about our process that outside of legislative agenda, there will be issues and there will be requests that will come to the city about supporting particular pieces of legislation. We obviously do a lot of work with our higher ed partners. There's actually a piece in our rural agenda, which is specifically represents a partnership with Oregon State University. So I will anticipate that there will be many other, there'll be 3,000 bills that will likely be introduced to the session, and the city will be asked to sign on to some of those. Sort of rather than trying to kind of cover everything in a single priority, I think we also have the opportunity to bring some things back to you all for consideration.
And I'm glad you mentioned that because we have supported the support for rural provision of services in the past and will continue to do so. A new item which I want to highlight for everyone on the current agenda is identifying that we have a lack of mental health care providers in Oregon, whether people have insurance or not. And so that's a piece of the higher ed that I'm particularly interested in, is making sure that we attract and retrain licensed medical practitioners who can help with our mental health care crisis.
Good. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to offer an amendment to the language of the public safety budgeting for the mental health crisis proposal. And I've got a few word changes, but also a paragraph I would suggest adding at the end. This is the paragraph, and I'll speak through the word changes. Uh, And this suggestion is actually based largely in a conversation I had yesterday with Richard Harris, who was state director of addiction into mental health. And he was underscoring the extent to which page? I'm sorry, it's page, page public safety budgeting for the mental health care crisis on page three.
Oh, okay.
What Mr. Harris was underscoring was the extent to which we can reasonably hope that the Medicaid expansion in 2014 will address a lot of our mental health needs, because a huge percentage of the people with mental illness the police encounter, I think we can safely say, are below 133% of poverty. So they will be eligible for Medicaid. Many of them, as you know, as adults, not children, are not now. So what Mr. Harris is saying is that we can hope that the CCOs will provide a broad range of mental health services for those folks, including, he thinks, even supported housing. So this item addresses the possibility of performance incentive funding from the state. If this county limits the number of prisons, the people it sends to state prisons, we could get money back to spend in public safety. Now, I think it would be perfectly appropriate to spend some of that money on mental health if needed. However, if the CCOs wind up providing the wide array of mental health services that those same folks need, then we could wind up spending, we could reserve the performance incentive funding for other public safety priorities. So I was going to suggest that, for one thing, we might change the words public safety budgeting for the mental health care crisis to public safety budgeting and the mental health care crisis, to make it clear that the money that we're asking for wouldn't only be for mental health. Also, another thing I wanted to change, we haven't mentioned yet, is I noticed that we use the phrase prevention, mental health services, and law enforcement programs, in part based on conversations I had yesterday with Commissioner Fritz and Commissioner Saltzman. I'd like to add the word reentry to that list, because reentry programs are critically important, both in the statement of the objective and also at the bottom of the page, the same phrase appears. And then add this language, or obviously if anyone has better language, please add it, which I've suggested, and I realize I gave away my own copy.
Well, I don't have a copy.
The language that I was suggesting adding at the end of the page is recognizing that the implementation of the Affordable Care Act will dramatically expand Medicaid coverage in 2014. The city asks that the legislature take steps to ensure that coordinated care organizations focus appropriate resources on the mental health crisis and support a broad array of services, including, I wrote, supported housing. The housing commissioner has just passed me his proposed amendment to that, which is supportive housing. To the extent that the Medicaid expansion addresses the mental health crisis, performance incentive funding can be reserved for other public safety needs. So I apologize for this last-minute, long-winded suggestion, but I think that I would think that we want to let the legislature know that we expect the CCOs to cover the mental health issues, and if they do, we could use the performance incentive funding for other needs.
I think we've captured the language of the proposed amendment, but the sense of it is what's most important. Is there a second for this?
I'm happy to second it for discussion.
So we've got this on the table, and again, we can take public comment as well, but Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you. I would like some more discussion with Commissioner Novick on this, and perhaps if this is a component of what we would be passing, we would move this adoption till next week. There's a number of issues with the coordinated care organizations who have been working diligently to get established and to set their priorities. I would want to look more carefully at what we would actually be asking the legislature to do in this regard, as opposed to working with the coordinated care organizations. And in particular, what the language in the last sentence that seems to preclude using any additional funding. The Commissioner Novick and Director Pellegrino and I have had some discussions on combining what was a previous policy on addressing the mental health care crisis with Commissioner Novick's suggestion of the incentive budget as incentive funding. And I think that perhaps we're recognizing that that has created some unintended consequences. We might want to consider separating the two so that, again, as things unfold at the legislature, we can make sure that we're very clear in our directives.
Do you have some counsel for us on this issue? It sounds like we've got work to do in terms of working out the policy differences among us, but that's fine. We can do that. But any thoughts about this, Martha?
Ultimately, we want to make sure that this priority accurately captures the will of the council, particularly on making sure we've got it right on the concept of what the governor is going to be taking up on public safety budgeting. We know that is going to be a strategy toward freeing up more resources to some of the other issues that have been identified, including mental health funding, including addiction and treatment. I agree with Commissioner Fritzen that this priority gets at a lot of things, but I don't necessarily think it's problematic unless we aren't able to clearly articulate what it is we mean to that by that. I think we will have an opportunity to work with the Ways and Means Committees about how they craft their budget, my hope would be we can get as close as possible today to give us direction, because we are the longer we wait to adopt the report, the less time we actually have to really kind of get moving on this very ambitious agenda. But I do want to make sure we get it right, and I want to make sure we have our language right in a place that all of council is comfortable with it.
Mayor. Commissioner,
to what extent do you believe that the legislature is going to be giving further direction to the coordinated care organizations?
You know, it's a great question, and Andy, I don't know if you've got some thoughts.
You know, I think that this next session you're going to see quite a bit of discussion about tracking the implementation of coordinated care organizations. I think you'll see Dr. Goldberg and others who have been in charge of setting them up and getting them moving, reporting to appropriate legislative committees. And, you know, I think that at that time they may receive direction from certain legislators on how implementation is going as it relates to how they intended the legislation, on what they intended the legislation to produce.
Actually, Commissioner Fritz, I recognize that this is something, I wrote this early this morning, and I recognize that it's something I'd rather talk to the coordinated care organization before putting in. I actually would be perfectly comfortable with removing the reference to the legislature and just saying something like the city will work with coordinated care organizations to ensure that appropriate resources are focused on the mental health care crisis, and just leave in the last sentence. I just want to have something in here that reflects the fact that we know and hope that we will have additional resources through the Medicaid expansion to address mental health. So we're not necessarily planning to spend all of our performance incentive money on mental health to the extent that that's already addressed.
I'm going to suggest that we go into a bit of a work session at the close, and if we need to recess or delay parts of this, we can, but I want to be respectful of the folks that have come here to testify on this issue. At least we know this is on the table, and if there are folks here that want to comment on this potential ingredient in our package, you can. But unless there's another item to put on the list, I'd rather save the debate and wordsmithing, which we still need to do, obviously, on this policy point, until a little later, and allow folks to go ahead and testify, if that's all right.
I just want to have one more comment on a different topic, and that was recognizing that we don't have anything in this agenda on clarifying the city's ability to provide discipline for our police force. We obviously are pursuing that issue through the Court of Appeals, and when we took that action, we noted that we might be asking the legislature for changes. My understanding is that we're currently thinking we will let the courts take care of it or make the decision for right now, and that we may bring something back in a future legislative session. So in case folks were wondering why that's not in here, I wanted to clarify that.
Good. Thank you. Great. Thanks, team. Appreciate this, and we'll need you back in a little while. I believe we have a number of people signed up to testify. I think I would like to extend the courtesy to, I see one elected official in the room, and that's City School Board Member Bobby Regan. I assume that you've signed up to testify this morning and would like to give you the opportunity to speak first.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Mayor Hales, Commissioners. My name is Bobby Regan, R-E-G-A-N. I'm a Portland citizen, a parent, and a Portland School Board member. I'm here to thank you for including public education as a high priority in your 2013 legislative agenda. For many years, Portland Public Schools has enjoyed a very close working relationship with the City Council, and it's clear from your legislative agenda that that is only getting stronger. I'm especially pleased that the first priority listed in your report is improve funding for K-12 education, as I listen to your conversation, I'm completely comfortable with improved funding for pre-K through 12 education. I appreciate that you plan to actively advocate in Salem to help us get there. And we look, and as we look to improve funding, we also recognize the real need to tackle unsustainable cost drivers, so we ask for your help in this area as well. You know, as we do, that there is no better long-term investment the state can make than in public education, which gives our kids hope for a great future. I also want to thank you specifically for your three education policy positions. The first is your partnership support for TriMet student passes, which provides students with free transportation to and from school, to after-school activities, and to work. This program also instills what we hope will be a lifelong commitment to public education, to public transportation. Your second education policy supports state funding for seismic upgrades to public school buildings, allowing school districts to begin reinvesting in our aging infrastructure statewide, so thank you for that. And your third policy supports tuition equity for all Oregon students, allowing any student who has received their primary education in Oregon, regardless of their legal status, to pay in-state tuition as they move on to college. This will help to ensure a strong workforce while providing equity and opportunity for every single Oregon resident. As a final note, I want to thank you for your support under public safety, for statewide legislation to prohibit the sale of assault weapons and high-capacity ammunition magazines. The highest responsibility of the Portland School District and of every school district in Oregon is the safety of our students. When parents entrust their children to us, it is our responsibility to keep these students safe. We need help from our state leaders and our congressional delegation in passing common sense gun safety measures to protect our kids and our community. So as I wrap up, I want to thank you so much for the 2013 legislative agenda that you have presented. I want to thank you for your commitment to our community, to our public schools, and to our kids. And I want to tell you that you make us proud. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks for your service. Okay, Carla, call up the first three, please.
Are Bill McLean, Mary Vogel, and Jean Bucchierli.
Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning.
As you testify, just give us your name for the record, and if you're representing an organization, let us know.
My name is Bill McLean, M-C-L-E-A-N, and I'm here to address the issue of public safety. What brings me here is an incident that happened in the city of Portland a couple weeks ago. Two guys jumped out of a car with AK-47s on Northeast 11th and confronted two Latino gardeners. They were handled by the City of Portland police. They went on court. They were given a misdemeanor and given their guns back and said, thank you very much, walk the streets. The law is, but if you're a citizen threatened by someone with a gun, I believe it should be a felony. And they should not have guns available to them. So that being said, if you have a gun, it should be registered. You should have a license, like a hunting license. If you're in the city limits of Portland, you should be given a fee. And I think they should be responsible for this weapon that's under their charge. They should have to pay some kind of liability insurance, just in case this thing under their care does some damage. Because right now, all the damage that's done by guns in our society falls on the taxpayer. It doesn't fall on the manufacturer. It doesn't fall on the gun show owner. It doesn't fall on the person who owns a gun. It falls on the taxpayer. I think we need to address this issue. That being said, also, they should be licensed every year. And these people have the guns. I think it's up to the city to post who has guns in my neighborhood. These are some of the things that can be done, and I think some of these issues everyone on both sides can agree on. Everyone says we need to keep guns out of the hands.